Yes.
You want a pen?
Good afternoon. I need to have your attention. We're going to begin by turning to page 28. My name is Lonnie Burkhart. I am a liturgist at Incarnation Catholic Church in South Minneapolis. I've been asked to begin by praying the prayer for this session, but the song that we're supposed to sing we don't know, so we'll learn it. If you're visual and need it, it's on page 28. What I'd like to do is I'll sing the first line and then have you sing it back, and we'll learn it that way. Okay, it goes like this. Oh, great Spirit, earth and wind and sea. Everybody? Oh, great Spirit, earth and wind and sea. Excellent. Come and sing in my choir Sunday morning. All right, now listen, it's the same, the second line. You are inside and all around me. You are inside and all around me. Excellent. Now let's do the whole thing all together. Oh, great Spirit, earth and wind and sea, you are inside and all around me. Now talking God, with your feet I walk. I walk with your limbs. I carry forth your body. For me your mind thinks. Your voice speaks for me. Beauty is before me, and beauty is behind me. Above and below me hovers the beautiful. I am surrounded by it. I am immersed in it. In my youth, I am aware of it. And in old age, I shall walk quietly the beautiful trail. A Native American prayer. Oh, great Spirit, earth and wind and sea, you are inside and all around me. And again, quietly. Gather together the spirit that is within us. Bring it together to collective blessing as we bless our speakers who will share their wisdom with us. I invite us all to stand. If you're comfortable standing, we'll sing the Bless Sophia song, and I invite you to do the movements with.
Bless Sophia, share the vision.
Thank you, Lalani. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Karen Diamond, and I have the pleasure of introducing our three speakers this afternoon for the Church as Spiritual Institution, and they can all tell you why they don't like the phrase spiritual institution. Just a few logistical things. We are passing out yellow cards to for you to write your questions on, and we will try to address as many of those questions for our speakers after they dialogue with us as we possibly can. I'm going to introduce first Joan Martin with a story. I'm sorry. I goofed up.
Ada Maria Sasadias is going to be our first speaker, and I will tell her story first. In 1979, Ada participated with a group of women in dialogue, and they went to Puebla, Mexico, to a Latin American bishops' conference, in which they were not invited or couldn't participate, as you can imagine. She was part of a group, one of many, that organized themselves, and they titled themselves Little Puebla. Some bishops came to address their group, respected them enough to come and address their group, one of them being Oscar Romero. And that was just a few months before his death. What he did was talk about oppression, and Ada took the opportunity to question him about what are you doing for women, and what are you doing for oppressed women, and he somehow tried to answer the question, and she was booed by the crowd. He was somewhat noncommittal in his answers. The next day, another bishop addressed them, and Ada asked the same question, what are you doing, what about women? And received a similar response. Something like, Mary, the mother of Jesus, struggled in silence. Her heart leapt for joy as she participated in this struggle. And Ada Maria said to them, somehow, at this moment, what you say does not make my soul leap for joy. She became known as the woman whose soul does not jump for joy. Ada Maria, thank you.
Creo que es importante que pensemos en español por varias razones. Primero, porque la abuela siempre me decía que es el único idioma que Dios entiende. Segundo, porque lo hemos oído poquísimo. Y creo que tiene que ser punto de reflexión para todos, que somos una comunidad enorme, que traemos una tradición cristiana de una perspectiva riquísima a este país, y de que a partir de un par de décadas vamos a ser el grupo minoritario más largo en este país. Así que me deleita saber que algunas entienden, y los que no entienden, pues allá ellos que aprendan. It's a pleasure to be here among so many friends, and let me tell you, my heart does leap for joy here. It's important, I think, for many reasons for us to be here. I think, first of all, that it strengthens our resolve to seek justice for women. We encourage each other. We birth and rebirth each other. I hope it provides safe space for us. I believe in this kind of conference, there is nothing that should not be said. Of course, the norms of charity are not suspended, so we must treat each other with respect and care. But this conference, I believe, provides us with the opportunity to think new thoughts. I'll come back to this in detail in a few minutes, but let me tell you this much now. When I face up to men and tell them they have to give us women space and time to be real protagonists, to be the ones that lay out the plans, decide how to carry them out. When I insist in what we call in Spanish nuestro papel protagónico, invariably they ask me for specifics. You know, almost always I have several to give them. But they always want to know how we're going to get there and how are we sure that the way, what we're planning and the way we're going to get there is not mistaken. I do confess that I do feel that at times we lack concreteness in our historical project. Nuestro proyecto histórico a veces está flaco, está débil, le faltan detalles. One of the reasons we do not have a specific historical project, or that if we do, it lacks concreteness, is because we do not have the time and the space to think about it, and much less to try it out. To the men in my rather sassy, flippant, iconoclastic, Cuban hyperbolic way, I often say, look, brother, just in this Christian era or common era, you men have had 21 centuries to try things, and there are millions of us who have suffered and suffer from your poor, often pitiful plans. So give us women a chance. Give us an opportunity to try some new things. This conference should be a safe space for thinking new things and for attempting to express them. And this is the third reason it is a pleasure to be here among you all. I think the great majority of us have thought new things. A snatch here, another little piece over there. I believe these are all eschatological glimpses. I believe the great majority of us have some little snatches of the vision. And to use the term Hyun Kyung referred to this morning, what we need to do is piece them together so they become our whole horizon. I come to this conference to participate actively in the process of hearing each other into speech, to quote Nell, to place myself in a situation where we can attempt to articulate our pieces of the vision. And for this to happen, I believe we need to ban in this conference three phrases. Number one, the phrase, that is impossible. I think we all have more than enough experiences in life that tells us that if we have the vision, we can carry it out. So, no, that is impossible phrase in this conference. The second banned phrase in this conference should be, they will never allow it. The fact is, sisters and brothers, that they don't have much to say about allowing it, for we are the majority in churches and nowadays also in most seminaries. The third phrase that I believe should be banned is, well, that's what I think, leave me alone. If this is not a conference in which we do not leave each other alone, in which we engage each other, we will leave the way we came, disjointed, without having even one little bit clearer what our historical project should be. So engagement should be the name of our game. Banning this kind of phrases will really allow us to reimagine. And this is what I want to do during the first part of my presentation. Talk about the process of reimagining. Now, I'm Roman Catholic, and Roman Catholics don't know their Bible very well, so I was amazed at myself that I immediately thought of Acts 2:17 when this task they gave me when the papers arrived at home. If you remember Acts 2:17, Peter explains the strange way of acting of the followers of Jesus after the coming of the Spirit at Pentecost. And what he does is he refers to the book of Joel in the Hebrew Scriptures. The book of Joel in the First Testament starts with a picture of devastation. Devastation that is the result of the people turning away from Yahweh. But then there is the call to conversion. Render your hearts. The call to conversion. Follow immediately, and making therefore the conversion possible, the assurance that Yahweh is gracious and merciful and kind and slow to anger, and the promise of redemption. Do not be afraid, Yahweh says. Your land will yield fruits. You will eat plentifully. Then it shall come to pass, says the text in Joel, your sons and your daughters will dream dreams and see visions. On my men servants, on my maid servants, I will pour my spirit, and I, Yahweh, will show you wonders. I loved it when Hyun Kyun this morning quoted about the fact that Jesus expected us to do greater things than he did. And we've totally ignored that. And in us, Yahweh will show greater wonders even than Yahweh showed on Jesus. Dreaming dreams and seeing visions is a sign of the outpouring of the Spirit. And that is what we are about. I had hoped that somehow the title Pentecost would work itself into this conference. For if we come to see dreams and see visions and dream dreams, then what we are here about is a new Pentecost, a new outpouring of the Spirit. I want to suggest that when we are reimagining, we are in this process of dreaming the dream. That mere affirmation of what is, without openness to what could be or might be, in a way, is a denial of the ongoing presence of the Spirit among us. I believe that to recognize the Spirit in our lives, we need to develop what we call una hermenéutica de sospecha, a hermeneutics of suspicion. Hermeneutics, eschatological, epistemological, those are words that I pay dearly to learn at Union, so I always include them. And my favorite thing is I teach them to the grassroots Latinas in East Harlem where I worship. So I love when they use it, totally out of context, but they know their power words. So, you know, they'll just go up to the priest and say, we are hermeneutically privileged. And I just roar. For these hermeneutics of suspicion, we need to develop a lens. Espejuelos, gafas, muy particulares, muy importantes. And I think that what is central to this lens that we need to have in order to have a hermeneutics of suspicion is to understand that the way things are is not natural, that the way things are is not divinely ordained, that the way things are the way we humans have constructed them. So if we have constructed them, we can change them radically. A third thing, a lens that makes us realize that things are our construct and therefore we can change it. A third thing in the hermeneutics of suspicion is the fact that we got to work against a mindset, which is don't try to fix it if it's not broken. But the fact is, sisters and brothers, that sexism, homophobia, racism, ethnic prejudice, classism, imperialism, how much broken, much more broken do you want it?
Thank you.
Our churches, our lives, our institutions, our country, this whole enterprise of even the look towards the new world order, as far as I can see, is all basically flawed. And the hermeneutics of suspicion then tells us very clearly we have to fix it because it is broken. Finally, a hermeneutics of suspicion tells us that we cannot decide not to get involved. For as the saying goes, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. We benefit from the present structures, and we have to take responsibility for the way things are. We have to move from being liberals to being radicals. Hispanic women, Latinas that I work with, always kind of stop me and say, listen, you have privileges. Don't tell me you don't have privileges. Don't negate them. What we want to ask you is, how are you using them? How are you using them to undo the structures that oppress us? And instead of in our liberal ways wanting to just free ourselves, we love guilt, don't we? Oh, if we only feel guilty, we think we're a step ahead. And if we only would really work into what we are guilty of, which is denying the fact that we do profit, that we are privileged in the present structures, and that our radicalness starts when we look at those privileges and decide how we're going to use them to change the way that things are. Basic to this process of reimagining is a creative mentality instead of a patch-it-up mentality. So I want to give you a 1, 2, 3, 4. I tried to be Trinitarian, but I spilled into a 4, so. Thanks, Joan. In this creative mentality instead of a patch-it-up mentality, surely we don't have to reinvent the wheel, but please work on from your dreams and visions instead of using as the starting point of the way things are. Number two, if you do that, you are going to have new elements. And that's what I think we should all leave here and do on the way back, either by plane or by car. At least come up with a couple of new elements of our dream and vision that we can begin to flesh out and begin to implement in our day-to-day situation. I'll give you two of my new elements. Some of you have heard this a zillion times. One of them is be inclusive, but let us move away from a very false understanding of inclusivity, which says we all are the same. We are not the same. We don't want to be the same. What we need to deal with is how do we deal with differences, which is what we just refuse to do. And a second new element for me is this whole issue of power. Power, power. We have to do our power analysis. And we have to realize that power belongs to the community. And we exercise it only in a temporal way according to our gifts and the needs of the community. I believe, for example, that that's my situation right now, that the power is in the people who give power by coming to this kind of meeting, and that the people who organize it kind of say, okay, for this little chunk of time, you take the power, you have the gift of being able to identify this, of making a presentation, you do it. But that doesn't mean that the power is mine. The power resides in the community, and we use it according to our gifts and the needs of the community. A third element in the creative instead of patching it up mentality is that you have to definitely look at the positive parts of what is, but you also have to look at the negative parts. We tend to want to only look at the positive and capitalize on them, which is great, but that's why we many times leave just as they are the negative ones, and little by little then the negative ones eat away any kind of spreading out of the good ones that we have done. Finally, how we go about doing this will radically influence the outcome. The process cannot be separate from the content. We cannot, for example, do this in an authoritarian, hierarchical way and expect the result to be communal. We cannot work at this from the top down and expect the results to be that we work through consensus. We have to participate in creating situations in which as many people as possible are self-determining and participate in creating the structures that are going to influence their lives. These understandings of reimagining, I believe, go hand in hand with the purposes of the ecumenical decade of churches in solidarity with women. Do you know those purposes? They're very good, very important. Encouraging the women to take action in solidarity with women, enabling the churches to free themselves from racism, sexism, and classism, from teachings and practices that discriminate against women, affirming through shared leadership and decision-making, theology and spirituality, the decisive contributions of women in churches and communities, and empowering women to challenge oppressive structures in the global community, their country, and their churches. I want to quote Marianne Lundy. Is she here? Marianne, are you here? Yeah, she's back there. Marianne, you know, she co-chairs the committee on the decade. And in a leaflet she gave us, I was in this committee for a little while, so in the leaflet that they passed out, there's a quote there that says, "This is not to be a decade of women for women. It is not to be a decade for churches to work for women. It is to be the decade for men and women in churches to work together to bring changes in ecclesiastical and social structures that are obstacles to women's full development and participation." I must confess, it has been a terrible letdown to only see 63 brothers here. I really had expected, and I realized that most probably we're to blame. Like Mary Farrell said last night, we've been waiting to meet each other for so long, we wouldn't give up a single place for anyone else to come. But the fact is that this is not the decade of the women working for women. This is the decade of the churches in solidarity with women. And I would have liked to see a lot of the brothers here. It would have done their souls a lot of good. No, not so much yell at you, brother, but have yourselves yell at each other. Now, this whole issue of how we participate in change, how do we take on a creative edge to our doing, how do we flesh out our vision and so forth, I think has to become intrinsic to who we are, to what we do, to our way of life. And that's what I think spirituality refers to. I don't like the word spirituality. I haven't liked it for a long time. I'll tell you why quickly. First, it sets us dualistically. If you think of spirit, then you have to think of body. And basically, it also, number two, it kind of puts down el valor de lo cotidiano, the value of the everyday life. So prayer and contemplation are highlighted like if that was different or more important or better than la lucha diaria por sobrevivir, etc. It just sets that kind of dynamics. I think thirdly, it's used to judge us. It's used to judge us whose way of life is one of engagement and one of action, and we're not necessarily any less, quote, spiritual than those whose life is one of more prayer and contemplation. My favorite is Betty Bone Cheese from Syracuse, who always says, "I pray best with a picket sign in my hand." And fourthly, the reason I don't like spirituality is simply because I haven't heard a single grassroots Latina in East Harlem, in El Barrio, talk about spirituality. They talk about their lives, they talk about their lucha, they talk about what they have to do to survive, to put a meal in the table. I never heard them talk about spirituality. Anyway, I want to talk about a way of life instead of about being spiritual, about spirituality. I want to, when we talked, we said, okay, basically then what we'll say is that church as a spiritual institution means church as a justice-seeking institution, church as a prophetic institution. But Joan and Violet are going to work much more with that, so I'll skip that. I really want to just say one more thing here about churches as human institutions, because we don't believe that. We somehow get this idea that Jesus intended our churches to be the way they are. Rosemary Radford Ruther, I worked with her on a committee that had a dialogue with Roman Catholic bishops. Can you imagine? And the head of that committee was really anguished. And one day he said to us, "But Jesus, the church is the way Jesus wanted it." So after we talked and talked and talked, he says, "Well, at least you have to realize that it's maybe the way Jesus intended, if not actually wanted." Bishop McAuliffe, for those of you who might know him. And Rosemary, in her wonderful, funny way, she kind of sits back and says, "Well, it's To say Jesus intended the church to be the way it is like saying that Sitting Bull wanted the Bureau of Indian Affairs to be the way it is. We had to call for a break because all of us just cracked up, and they were so anguished that we didn't know what to do with what was going on there. I'm running out of time. 3 minutes. I want to use just this last 3 minutes. I most probably will take five. To keep in mind.
Pero es que no me dejan hablar lo suficiente.
Joan just passed her Spanish exam, so, you know, she's understanding everything I'm saying in Spanish here. To keep in mind that to dream the dreams and the visions have to be moved toward implementation. That part of our reimagining has to be about ways in which we can make our dreams impact the institutional churches, our local churches, and our seminaries. In reality, sisters, I'm first and foremost a justice-seeking person. I'm a 7 in the Enneagram. I'm an activist, and I want, therefore, to propose some strategies for you to consider. Besides, one of my biggest mentors was Marjorie Tuitt, and I always feel if I stand here and don't talk about strategies, Margie will come back, pull my hair, don't let me sleep for ages to come. So, in your honor, Margie, here we go. First of all, don't be purists. Strategies cannot be purists. Compromise, I see Pat Hughes back there, yes, yes. Compromise is many times necessary. That doesn't mean that you allow yourself to be co-opted, that you understand why you're compromising and you work the compromise into your strategy. That's very, very important. Number two, do not go alone. Yeah. Do not work alone for several reasons. And the one I want to stress here is the fact that if you go alone, you run the risk of being co-opted. Do not think you are above it, no matter how pure your intentions, how much fasting you have done. The institutions are extremely capable of seducing us, and they're extremely capable of co-opting us. Therefore, you need to go with several people that can keep you honest, that can strengthen each other. Third, as a total outsider, you have little possibility of impacting the institution. As a total insider, you will not want to change it because you are benefiting from it so very much. So in a way, we all have to be insiders, outsiders. We have to relate enough to church, to seminaries, to different institutions, to know how it works, to know where some of the cracks are that might provide us with an entry point. But we have to be outsiders. We have to always have the possibility of critiquing them, of offering a prophetic cry. And this is possible if our vision is specific.
If our dream is alive and it's what is grounding us. I lost my number. Fourth. You need to develop a multifaceted approach in your strategies. We have to have a variety of ways of carrying out our strategies so that people will be able to connect with them wherever they are at. And at least I always think any strategy for us has to have 3 levels. One, at the level of prayer, of moral support. People share the vision, but for a zillion reasons, have to do that in a non-public way. And I don't want at all to make anyone think, because of what I say about spirituality, that I don't think that prayer is key. I hope that even if it is in private, however, these prayers will be similar to the smashing of coconuts in front of Kali. Another level is the educational level. We need to broaden our base by helping others know things like the church is a human construct. The church is oppressive to women. People still say, I've never experienced that. We need an educational broad enough to talk about things like our God is a radically immanent God instead of a totally transcendent God and so forth.
And a third level is the witnessing level, the action component, the prophetic actions of complaint and recrimination, of denunciation and calling to conversion. And I think we need to push ourselves here. Our prophetic actions seem to be stuck in the 60s. We have not invented new ways of throwing arrows to the oppressors, like the Korean Minjung woman Hyun Kyung talked about last night. We have to stop worrying about embarrassing those in authority. We have to stop worrying about how they are going to feel. We have to be loyal sisters to ourselves and each other and the myriad of women who have been burned up or burned out by the church. Finally, I think we need to have a community of accountability. Tenemos que tener una comunidad aquí a la que le rendimos cuentas. A community that holds us accountable, to whom we have to explain, with whom we have to check out our plans and ideas. A community that works with you, and challenges you. A community that together with you can become a community of resistance and solidarity. A community that struggles to implement the vision that can become, that should become a way of life. And this way of life perhaps is summed up best in the understanding that to struggle is to live, that la vida es la lucha. Muchas gracias.
Thank you. Thank you, Ana Maria.